you will come to order. We do have Representative Worth at a photo shoot, be here momentarily. Representative Crummel will be just a minute or two late. But we're going to start. It's with some excitement that I tell you about Brian Warneth.
That's correct.
And Brian has some a presentation on technology that I think you're going to find most interesting. And with that, Brian, if you'll identify yourself for the record, away we go. We do have a little bit of an exception. We have I believe it's the entire school from Mitchell. They're the Mitchell Loggers. Their basketball team won first place in the Trico League this year. And if they have information on questions about your presentation, probably will deviate from the rules a little bit and allow them to ask those questions when you're all done.
Most certainly.
Thank you very much, Brian. And with that, tell us what we can do.
Well, my name is Brian Warneth. I'm with LCN Media and Consulting Group, and I'm representing the Oregon High Performance Computing Consortium. And just bear with me. This week I'm the poster child for allergies. The overview right now is, to summate this whole thing, we're looking at innovative and affordable ways we can better utilize and leverage state resources, specifically their computing resources for economic development purposes. I.e., specifically developing supercomputing resources. The goals are pretty straightforward in developing supercomputing resources within the state. It's to attract and create economic development opportunities and investment opportunities throughout the whole state. So whether it be Portland or way out in Mitchell, possibly, hopefully, certainly further areas out in Portland. Thank you. Along with that, we wanted to create additional job opportunities. Along with that also, in addition to augment the existing curriculums within higher education. So we want students or potential students to say, in-state and out-of-state, say, I want to go to an Oregon school because, and then fill in the blank. But in addition to that, we want to augment the funding mechanisms within higher ed. Right now, from what I was informed by Senator Frank Morse's office, that 14% of the general fund 14% of that money goes to higher ed, and 16% goes to incarceration. But that's another topic we won't get into today. So, also in addition, we'd like to further diversify Oregon's economy. In addition to that, we think this will also increase the return on assets of those existing IT resources out there. So you make those, basically make those more efficient and more financially efficient. And we think, in addition to that, you're supplying a technical or a needed technical resource that engineers, financiers, economists can tap into from all over the state. And this particular way of doing this, a computing grid, it lends itself more to multiple use. Excuse me. I guess one could view this as the 6-in-1 kitchen tool of supercomputing. Without the 50-year warranty, though. First of all, what is supercomputing? It can be achieved in several ways. Also, it's known today more as high-performance computing. And basically, it's computers that can perform hundreds of millions, billions, even trillions of calculations per second. Who uses supercomputing? Pretty much every sector, every industry does. Aerospace engineering, oil and gas exploration, economic and financial forecasting, weather and climate forecasting, atomic research, biomedical engineering, people at our schools in higher ed want to use it for various, for human genome research, for agricultural genome research. They want to use it for fluid mechanics and computational fluid analysis. They want to see the body secreting fluids in real time and being able to calculate all this. They use it in a lot of pharmaceutical research. When I spoke with Marty Brantley, the head of the Economic and Development Department, Marty said there's a pharmaceutical company that expressed interest in coming to Oregon, and he said this would be a perfect opportunity for, or this would be a perfect resource to help lure some of those, or entice some of those types of organizations to Oregon. This is the old style supercomputer. It's a traditional monolith. They oftentimes refer to it as the chunk of iron locked away in a room somewhere. Often it's portrayed in movies. It tends to be a very, very expensive to purchase, millions upon millions of dollars. I think the most expensive one right now, and one of the largest ones right now, is the Earth Simulator in Japan. It was created by NEC, and they put it together for something like $300 million, $350 million. But I'm sure you could pick them up for a lot less, for maybe somewhere $50 million or so. It tends to be generally used for a single purpose, so it's not generally the quote-unquote six-in-one kitchen tool. It's usually locked away in some engineer's vault somewhere, or some biomechanics vault somewhere. It tends to be more costly to operate, too. The second option is what I would be opting for. It uses the existing hardware and networks within the state system already. It's affordable to purchase or affordable to use. It uses the pre-existing assets. So if you look around, it already uses the computers that are already there and already the current networks. excuse me. It's easily expandable, so when you max out your capacity, you don't have to go out and mortgage the state or the farm, so to speak, to buy another supercomputer. You can just add more boxes, so to speak, include more boxes. It's well adapted to multiple uses. Like I said, it's kind of the six-in-one kitchen tool of supercomputers. And it's, interestingly, it's the common choice preferred in private industry. If you look at my proposal on page 14, there are some summarized case studies pertaining to who's using supercomputing. Here again, it increases the return on assets of those expensive, costly IT infrastructures. But interestingly enough, industry is not only using this, but they're upping their use of it also, which we'll kind of get into a little bit later. This is, might be an example here. A typical day at any state office. 8 o'clock you arrive, noon, there's lunch, and 5 o'clock you go home. But you look there and there's people sitting in front of their computers all day. What happens at 5:01? Kind of a big vacuum. But there's one thing that's remaining, and that's the computers. Computers are still there. People don't take them home, or they shouldn't take them home, at the state offices and schools. That you have excess capacity. So how much excess capacity, or I should say unused capacity, that's sitting there idle, not being used? Well, there was an IBM study a while ago that suggests 10 to 20%, rather, the person only uses or accesses their computer about 10 or 20% of the time. And the rest of the time, it's not being used at all, or it's not being accessed. So that means the brains of the computer is just sitting there idle. If you look at that in more detail, excuse me, that accumulates to about a little over 8,200 hours of computing time per box or per PC, per workstation, per server that you're looking at per year. So you could say every night you go home, you're in a sense throwing this capacity away, or potential capacity. So with that unused capacity and the computers already sitting there, you have a network already installed, and this creates an affordable and powerful computing grid ready to do heavy-duty computational number crunching and research and analysis. And the whole key here is affordable. You can liken it to a symphony orchestra. Existing unused computing resources can be allocated and synchronized for large computations. So for example, let's say each of those people in the orchestra were a computer. You can see the yellow computers, let's say, might represent the revenue department. The dark blue computers might be the Department of General Services and so forth. And the conductor is a computer. Let's say you have a huge equation to solve, and you don't have a supercomputer. But the next best thing is this, a computing grid. So you can take a little piece of that equation or problem and put it on one computer, put it on another, put it on another, so to speak. And then when all of those little equations are done, the orchestra, the director, brings them all together, and then you have your problem solved. What's the justification for developing high-performance computing resources within Oregon? Well, first of all, academics can use it, and they are currently using it right now, but to a very limited degree. Excuse me. A good litmus test right now is other state governments and universities around the country are developing it. They're putting huge amounts of money, millions and millions of dollars into this. North Carolina recently put a supercomputer in. In fact, they call it the Big Mac because it's made of all Macintoshes, if my memory serves correct. And what they did is they did an economic impact study. And what they did is they ran high-speed access lines out into the rural communities. And they also had supercomputing capability. And if you took the whole ball of wax, so to speak, they estimate that the state will inject $10.1 billion into their economy through the year 2010. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that Oregon probably could use some of that money, maybe $1 billion of it or so. Private industry is using this to not only to reduce costs on their IT infrastructures, make them more run more efficiently and effectively, but they're using it to be more competitive. As you can see on the example on page 14 of my proposal, Symantec, I believe, was one pharmaceutical company, or Novartis, I believe it was, and they're coming up with new pharmaceuticals, and they're using this in human genome research and making some real cutting-edge discoveries. Finally, there was an IDC study conducted in 2003, and it basically said that there is a demand for affordable supercomputing, and there's not only a demand for it, but it's rapidly growing. This is kind of in a nutshell what I'm proposing. This would be financial scenario one, which I'd be proposing. And to compare apples to apples, and at times it was a bit different, or difficult rather. But basically what I would be opting would be to create a state high-performance computing resource that markets or leases, sells, however you want to determine that at a certain point in time. The unused capacity, excuse me, but also the consulting services that would go along with that. So, in a sense, kind of offer a one-stop shopping center for high-performance computing. This was calculated at a four-year net present value, with revenues being reinvested at 3.83%, and while I was enlisting 2,500 PCs. 3.83%, you're probably wondering where that came from. It's basically, it's benchmarked from the five-year rate of return of PERS, Tier 1, I believe it was, retirement fund. Another idea is to, this can also be used as possibly tax credits or resource credits in lieu of or in addition to tax credits as a resource. This financial scenario too would be just creating the supercomputer resource, but not doing any marketing or selling of those resources, not being the one-stop shopping center with attached services. And financial scenario three tries to attempt to guesstimate what is currently being done now. The sources for initial capitalization would come from state and any state and federal appropriations, public or private grants, corporate donations and sponsorships, any prepaid services. Currently, interestingly, there are some people that are, like for example, the Murdoch Trust. Dr. Ben Seitfeld has expressed an interest in this. The earnings from operations, like I mentioned, would come from leasing affordable high-performance computing time, offering computational setup, parallelizing the software so it runs on a supercomputing environment, offering consulting expertise in statistical analysis and statistical controls, and any additional research in development, testing, validation in hardware or software that would be related to supercomputing. I think these are rather important because your typical biochemist, bioengineer, isn't necessarily, in fact, a lot of those people are far from being quite computer literate. So this would help give them a resource to tap into, rather than creating the computing grid and just saying, okay, there it is, go use it. Most of the people would say, well, how do you use it? The total revenue potential for financial scenario one, these are annual projected revenues. And this is a ideal best case scenario using 100% of the unused capacity with 2,500 PCs. So you can see if you charge 15 cents per hour per PC, and incidentally that's what about Gateway Computers was charging or will be charging for a computing grid that would be set up, you would accumulate just over $3 million. Now if you go to IBM, they're going to be charging about 70 cents an hour, or this is as of about 4 to 6 months ago. The estimated financial scenarios compared here, this is where it gets kind of interesting. If you look at the red line first, this tries to kind of project, kind of guesstimate what the state is doing now. This is no high-performance computing scenario. And right now, if you have 2,500 PCs sitting there being used, right now... Excuse me. Right now, it's going to be costing the state over a four-year period about $20 million to service those. Actually, I have two over here already. Thank you, Dale.
I'll drink this one myself then.
Now, if you compare the... If you do put in a computing grid, is it going to cost money? Absolutely. If you look at the scenario, the financial scenario number two, if you create the grid, the computing grid, but you don't try to do anything with marketing the excess capacity at all, it's going to cost you probably somewhere over that four-year period about $24 million. Now, keep in mind, I didn't try to guesstimate any economic development investment opportunities in this. So, obviously, we're hoping that that would be something that would be later added on to. I thought it was too much of a... I didn't want to present too much of a blue sky picture. But now look at the financial scenario number one. If you charge, let's say, for example, 8 cents an hour per PC per hour, over that four-year period, on the average, you're going to cover the costs or break even to where you're already at. If you go up further, you're going to, let's say, charge 32 cents. That's what I call the break-even threshold. So that's probably where you're actually breaking even right there. Anything above that would be profit. This is the same slide, basically, except looking at it per PC basis. So, for example, each box out there, so to speak, currently the state is probably spending about, I think it was right around $9,000 over a four-year period. This is estimating that your administrative costs are going to be about $2,200 per PC. And that's actually fairly low. In academics, they're saying it's about even $2,000. In private industry, it's going to be even the estimate for what they call cost of ownership is... Well, it's been going down all the time for the last number of years, but it's right around $2,500. This is quite interesting here. If you look at what the returns are, we looked at the NPV, net present values, and actual dollar figures. Now we can look at the percentage of return. So what percentage of return are we looking at? So what ideal situation again, 100% capacity being used. If we charge 33 cents an hour, for each machine, 2,500 machines, we make a 6% return. Now, financial scenario two, if we build the grid, but we don't try to market anything or try to do any economic development, we're about at a minus 76 return. Currently, we're probably about a minus 74 rate of return. So, to comparatively speaking, implementing a grid or that type of technology looks pretty promising, at least the numbers do. Now, there's two things that affect your profitability. The cost, or the what the market will bear for that price per hour, and also the amount of capacity demanded. So 100% capacity, that's ideal situation. But as you get further and further down, obviously we get negative numbers then. And someone might say, well, negative numbers, why would we want negative numbers? Well, ideally we don't want negative numbers. But at least they're not as negative as the financial scenario three, which would be the estimated current situation. Comparing the estimated total cost of financial scenario one and financial scenario three of what is financial scenario three is what is being guesstimated as what the state is doing right now. It would cost a little over $1 million a year, what it would come down to fund such a computing grid. Now that's with a staff of, I believe, four people doing some business development. There's also a part-time statistician in there. You can look in the pro forma financials, it's all included in there. Comparing the estimated costs from financial scenario two of just building the grid and not using it for any economic development purposes, this is rather interesting. So just for another little over $250,000, quarter million dollars a year, you can really have a staff of people really trying to market this excess capacity and developing services that go along with that, resources that go along with that, like parallelizing software and so forth. There's a foundry, I can't mention the name of the company at this point. It's located in Portland, but they do large castings, and they wanted to put together a system where they could render these castings and look at them. And they estimated it was going to cost about $100,000 to have that capability. So instead of, they want to put together a computing grid. So instead of having their existing computer take days to do it, they want to be able to do it in a matter of minutes or hours. Probably the best thing to do, in my recommendation, would be to do some type of pilot project. And this would be probably like a 2-year pilot project consisting of several hundred PCs or workstations or servers or some combination of the above. So you're looking at roughly around $250,000 per year. The intent would be to determine what the best technical solution would be. So for example, the biochemists, there's certain applications of the technology that works best for them. There's certain applications that work best for chip designers and electrical engineers, so forth. This would also give a chance to test and refine the business model, and also further investigate what services, what services can be added to that for additional revenues. The estimated pilot profitability outlook, this is a guesstimate too, but you're looking at probably right around 28 cents per hour per PC to be at a break even. And that is calculated at a 2-year net present value. And once again, those earnings are reinvested at 3.83%. And that's here again, that's utilizing best case scenario of 100% capacity being used. Possible organizational structure is such that or something like an Oregon High Performance Computing Consortium organization would have the opportunity to kind of be the intermediary for sharing the costs, benefits, and resources, not only with Oregon universities, but also with the state of Oregon and qualified organizations in the private sector. I've spoken with, for example, Patty White. She's the CEO of Innovize. It's a heart monitoring company. They broke off from Hewlett-Packard and have some quite interesting technology. Oh, excuse me. When I spoke with Patty, I asked if this is something that maybe their customers could use, because hospitals get into some types of research too. My wife works at Legacy, and Holiday Park is a research facility. And she said, well, actually, this is something we could probably use to test our algorithms, because it takes a long time to test their algorithms. And small companies like that don't have the money really to have a bunch of PCs or workstations sitting around doing nothing most of the time. And I was just going to say, let me go back to that slide for a second. Now, some of you might ask, well, would this be a separate department, or what type of entity would it be? Well, that's really open-ended at this point. Where would it be housed? Well, that's open-ended at this point, too. some of the challenges would be further educating. Putting in a computing grid would be further educating the organizations that they could benefit from supercomputing. I think there are several tiers of people right now. There's the group that knows they know they could use supercomputing. There's the group that could use supercomputing, but they don't know they could use it. And then there's the group, obviously, that has no need for it. And then the second group is probably a fairly large group, I would say. It kind of goes back to a bit of an example. I remember when I first got my first Macintosh computer, I was sitting down using it, and my wife needed to type a term paper, so she wanted to use my typewriter. And I said, well, why don't you just use the computer? And she looked at that thing and she said, no, I'll just use the typewriter. And then after that, she was using the Macintosh. She was a complete convert to the computer, that is. I don't see this as a major challenge, but finding the optimal technical solution and agreeing upon that might be something of an issue. Overcoming the politics. The technology has been around for quite a while. We know it's tried and true. That's important to know. That you know you're not going to buy some vaporware out there that doesn't work, or some concept that doesn't work. So there was a study done, and I can't quote you the date or the name of the study, but in some of my readings there, I believe it's quoted that. excuse me. The study said that basically there's a tendency for people to believe that, wow, this is a great idea to go and use all this excess capacity, but I don't want people to use it on my computers. So some of that can be alleviated by certain types of transfer pricing models to encourage people to participate. Interestingly, I've spoken with a number of CIOs around the state, Don Fleming, spoken with Ed Johnston, who used to be at PERS, and all they think it's a good idea. I spoke with Kurt Amo, he was at ODOT, now he's at the employment office, and he was a CIO, now he's been promoted. Excuse me. And he thought this general concept was very interesting and something to be explored further. I kind of played devil's advocate a bit. I asked him, I said, well, what about security issues? And he said, well, he didn't think it was something that just standard firewalls, so to speak, could take care of. Some other challenges might be future commoditization of high-performance computing resources. If IBM is selling it today for 70 cents an hour per PC, what's it going to be tomorrow? Well, it tends to be a rapid commoditization in the high-tech business. And also maybe another challenge might be getting or obtaining initial funding. The benefits are the technology is proven. It's tried and true. We know it'll work. We've been doing it for 20-plus years with computing grids. It tends to have numerous supplied applications. It's kind of the 6-in-1 kitchen tool of supercomputing. It can be used for financial forecasting. In fact, actually, Charles Schwab is using the brokerage. I believe J.P. Morgan and Charles Schwab are using distributed systems. A division of Nippon Life Insurance Company is using distributed systems to recalculate actuarial tables. And so forth. You can see in those examples on page 14. It's easily expandable. It increases the efficiencies, the financial efficiencies, increasing the return on assets of those costly IT infrastructures. It creates a needed technical resource that people could or organizations can tap into. The purpose here is to attract and create statewide economic development, so it's not just Portland-centric anymore, so it starts to branch out into other areas to make use of or harness some of that brain power out in some of those outlying areas of Oregon. Help diversify Oregon's economy, it's to augment higher ed curriculums and funding mechanisms. Interestingly, Senator Morse is opting has proposed, I believe it's Senate Bill 853, excuse me, 853, which would probably coincide well with something like this. Other states are investing in these type of resources, which is a big clue, I think. Some of these states are investing huge amounts of money. Am I opting to put huge amounts of money into this? Well, I'm opting for a pilot first, and then we can hone it from there. So let's just say, for example, it wouldn't work. Well, then we haven't lost a lot then. It's a small investment compared to the traditional monolith supercomputing. And like I mentioned just briefly before, it has an affordable exit strategy. And that really concludes my talk. So if you have any questions or anyone else in the room here have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those to the best of my ability.
Questions from the... I do have a few while they collect their thoughts a little bit. If we were to call somebody in to or start gathering information and do a discovery, what is the downside? What would people sit at the dais there and tell us are going to be our problems?
Good question. Probably relating back to some of the challenges. The main thing is, you would probably, if you talk to technology people, this is a very specialized area, tends to be, and there are companies out there, like cited in my proposal, United Devices. I don't want to make this an infomercial for United Devices, but they have software which allows this capability, and you can run it on different operating systems, so you can have a whole building of Macintoshes and a whole building of PCs and mainframes and have the whole ball of wax talk to one another and work together. Anytime I've talked to people, for example, in academics or on the technical side, they always, it's kind of funny because they don't look at the financial side. They start saying, well, this would be something you have to overcome, to have these machines talk to these machines. And so that's probably... essentially what you'd be hearing a lot of, I would say. That's why I would probably, in a pilot, ideally would I like to have the universities develop some type of, or have some type of co-development between the state and the universities for some pilot and then some implementation, absolutely. But I think maybe for pilot, I think to have something more cost-effective, you could go with a pre-canned solution out there, try it out, see if it works, and go from there.
When we talk about that, if there's revenue to be made, why wouldn't the state simply make their boxes available and allow private enterprise to organize them, provide security, implement the software, and then simply take the revenue or do a lease arrangement? Why would the state get in, if there's money to be made, why isn't this, or is this attractive to private enterprise?
If I understand your question, it is attractive to private enterprise, but there's certain niches of organizations that are small, for example, like Patty White's company, which are small entrepreneurs that don't have readily the financial resources to or the actual sheer numbers of computers in their office to tackle something like this. And secondly, I've talked to researchers up on the Hill at OHSU, Dr. Gail Clinton. In fact, she's made some quite remarkable strides in cancer tumor research and halting the growth of cancer tumors, and especially brain tumors. I believe it was... Glios. Anyway, I spoke with her and she said this is, she also has a startup on the side actually. And I said, is this something you would feel like you could use? And she said, probably, this is about 6 months ago, 8 months ago, in this conversation. I spoke with her and she said, yes, eventually it probably is, very much so. So you have someone here that, excuse me. So you have someone here that isn't really a computer person, but has a vast knowledge in a certain area. So this, what better way to help facilitate the use of this? And Dr. David Robinson, he runs a little small, very recently formed computing cluster, computing very, very small. I say grid, it's not even a grid, it's a cluster, you know, little computers for some of his research. And as he put it, he thinks the flood, when the flood, or at one point in time, he thinks at a certain point in time, that when the gates open, there will be a flood of demand for this. But he said, he conferred, and he mentioned that he believes that you're going to have to make it so user-friendly, like it, as easy as clicking open your Explorer browser. Yes, I agree. Because these people are molecular biologists, they're you know, mechanical engineers, they're not oftentimes, most often they're not computer people. So to have a resource to go along with that and make it easy to use, I think would be very beneficial.
You've convinced this committee. We've decided we're going to write legislation, and we're all excited and ready to go, Brian.
Okay.
What are we going to write? What's our legislation going to be?
Well, I would propose some type of funding to at least to start for a pilot. That would be probably the first logical step. And like, for example, when I've spoken with, I did my graduate work at Oregon Graduate Institute. So I had a number of conversations with Ed Thompson there. And some of the other professors who expressed interest in this too, like Dr. Michelle Pavel, Dr. Stephen Hansen, who is the head of biomedical engineering now, and Dr. Hansen wants to do computational fluid analysis, and that's his specific area of specialty. But ideally, I think, I mean, I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to be an infomercial for higher ed or even for OGI, but I think having some type of placement of this, funding of this at in Portland, you have some of the, you have an epicenter of brains there to develop this and service this technology. You have logistically, it's a good place because there's a lot of entrepreneurs there with businesses. It's a good tie-in, I think, including higher ed in that, in my opinion. So ideally, I'd like to see some type of allotment, financial allotment toward appropriation for something like this being developed. OGI even said at one point that we were kind of in jest, you know, saying, well, gee, we need office space, and if you had any broom closet around here, maybe we could house this in. And they said, well, maybe we could arrange something. So there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of excitement about this, really.
Yes, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, I guess my question is, and I apologize for having to step out. So
oh, no, that's fine.
Answered this already. Forgive me. But what's stopping us from doing it now? I mean, why isn't the Oregon University system doing this now, or what's to prevent the Portland public school system from doing this now?
Well, nothing really is preventing it, per se. In fact, I asked some people from higher ed to come and sit behind me in kind of a cheering section, so to speak, if there was enough seats left available. Good thing Mitchell wasn't any bigger. But and they informed me that one individual informed me, well, actually, we couldn't do that because of the way things are structured. It can't be viewed as lobbying. And if you notice in my proposal that in the preface, I said I don't want to be this should not be taken as a lobbying effort by any means or advocating anything for any type of organization. But I think, as cited in my proposal, Ian Foster, he's got a PhD in computer science, I believe. He's up in Chicago, I believe. I think he teaches at Northwestern. But he says if you from a financial standpoint, you can get greater economies of scale if you consolidate this. So I guess you don't want a bunch of little stovepipe or little fiefdoms of computing grids around the state, ideally. It kind of sounds like the data centers issues that they're dealing with now. So to prevent that, let's nip that, prevent that problem from happening, or foreseeable problem, and we can kind of start that consolidation process right now and, you know, garner those economies of scale right away rather than worrying about it later. But I think a pilot would be most in store.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Thank you. Your case studies it looks like are mostly all done by private companies, corporations. And if we were going to do this with the public resources in the state of Oregon, to me, that's an entirely different set of circumstances, particularly when we're concerned about issues like security of our computers.
Absolutely. In fact, I was revising this a little bit to update some of the issues, or the numbers rather, over the weekend, and that was one of the things I wanted to, I really didn't update. But, for example, IBM has done some installations in Hawaii. I can forward on some information to you where universities or state governments have gotten involved, either in the implementation of this or the more or less the funding of this. I think Virginia got involved. There's a press release I found. In fact, I think it might be on my computer here. They actually, ironically, they have something structured similar to this. And I found out about it about, well, maybe 2 months ago. They're using state money in hopes that this will spur some economic development within their state. In fact, it's from their state economic development department, I believe. If I'm not mistaken, I have to double check that. But Texas is involved in this. Florida is involved in this. California is involved in this. Let me preface that. California, there's some consortium between Florida and California and academics and some private investment, matching private investment money. And so it's not just an isolated case when I've cited North Carolina, for example. One question might come to mind is, well, there's a PNNL, Pacific Northwest Labs, up in Washington, the federal, run by Bechtel, it's the federal agency. They do supercomputing there, but it's kind of like a good analogy might be like standing in the line at the DMV. It's kind of like take a number and wait, and if they do select you, you have to have research, or your research has to be the same research that they're doing. And if they have room for you, then they'll allow you to use their computers. And if then you have to publish your results. Well, I'll tell you right now, a lot of people in private industry would not want to publish results, at least right away, because there's a lot of proprietary knowledge that they would not want released.
Follow up,
certainly, Representative Billy.
Well, specifically, and again, the reason I point this out, I mean, you know, if you're Charles Schwab, as case study 4 and 5, and you're linking all your servers together, I mean, these are all behind the firewall and behind the perimeters and are all inside this corporate computer security domain, if you will. But here we've got this stuff scattered all across the state in different school districts and county offices and state offices and all that. I mean, how do we assure that the security's there so somebody's not breaking into these computers?
Well, that is a good issue. That's why there's certain environments that will be better suited for that, and there are other environments that probably you would not want to have those computers partake in, and that's why you'd have to do some type of assessment.
Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, the state's getting ready to open a new data center in a few months. Are you suggesting that use of the data center would be a way of or setting something like this up within the data center might be a way of generating dollars to pay for it?
Absolutely. It's certainly potential. And if not, like I mentioned in my proposal, that's not even including potential economic development opportunities. I've gone to a number of AUKED committee meetings, spoken with Senator Morris and his policy analyst a number of times, Ed Wright, and I've spoken with Tom Hartung and Alan Alley, and they've all shown favorable opinions toward this idea. So I can I've spoken with the CIO at OHSU, and he's John Kanagi. He's very interested, very excited about this. They're doing some of this on a limited basis down at the Oceanic School at Oregon State University. So I guess if any one of you would want to check out what's going on down there on a limited basis, or the limited amount of high-performance computing that they're doing for some weather calculations and predictions, you certainly would be welcome to speak with Dr. Mark Abbott, who's the department head. Interestingly, Chuck Sears is the, I've spoken with him, he's the computing manager of the facility there. And he said when they started using more and more grid-like computers, one thing they did notice, and this was interesting, they didn't expect this. This kind of popped up as a benefit. And their students, their PhD students, could now collaborate on projects much more easily. So this was a real added benefit. And this is interesting. He said, we ran simulations on the Biscuit Fire. I said, interesting. Well, I said, what did you find out? And he said, we found out that from a cost standpoint, the fire could have been conducted, managed more cost effectively, and they could simulate this. They crunch a huge amount of data. From my understanding, I guess the U.S. Navy comes to them anytime they have need for weather or climatic data, because they have such a huge database of Northwest weather information. So this is another, it's been equated to when I worked at Hewlett-Packard in Vancouver. Our division made printers, but at the time, Carly Fiorina, who was the number one person, who's no longer there, but her philosophy was to make the printer a platform, a delivery of services to that printer. So obviously one delivery or one revenue source is consumables, is the inkjet cartridge. What's the one now? What's the one tomorrow? Well, who knows? Who knows? Maybe it's automatically printing out your email or so forth, or other services attached to that. But so it's kind of the same philosophy, what you can add on to this. You already have the networks installed. What else can you add on to that? Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. So, follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Certainly, Representative McCullough.
So have you, thank you. So have you talked with Don Fleming, the state CIO, and also have you talked with some of the folks, like, for example, at Easy Street or some of the other privately owned data centers around the area to see if there was an interest in them using their already existing facilities or expanding their facilities for this type of a project?
I know there's interest on the... I actually have not spoken specifically to, for example, like Easy Street and some of those other providers. I have spoken with Heavenet, a small provider, not specifically about this, but some other ideas. I know... I'm a subscriber with Heavenet, the local provider in Portland. But based on my contacts and my experience in industry, some of those people have kind of migrated into academics. So I've kind of relied on some of my contacts. And a lot of those have been now in government or in in academics, which there seems to be a huge interest.
So did I hear you say that, yes, you have talked with Don Fleming?
Oh, yes, I had, Doc, yes.
Okay.
And also Debbie Bryant at the time.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that the network, once it's developed, there are presumably at that point a finite number of providers. Is that network then closed to consumers?
Maybe you could.
Do you have to be a participant in the network in order to be able to utilize the supercomputing capacity?
Well, I think ideally you would have to be, yes, unless part of it is for security reasons. But that's still, you know, what is that criteria? I think that still needs to be developed through the business model. And what coincides with the Oregon law, or wherever this is going to be housed. For example, like the early ORTDA, Oregon Technology Development Account, I think it was originally housed, I can't remember in what department, but then later it was moved to higher ed, so then those funds or those equities then could be managed.
Mr. Chairman. Follow up. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you aware of any other states that you've already mentioned that have engaged in this, having had problems? If the network is closed and we're using at least in part public resources, for anyone making a claim of not having equal access?
I have not heard of that presently.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple questions. On page 15 of your presentation, you said at the time this report was written, several foundations have expressed an interest in financially assisting with the initial startup funding of an Oregon high-performance computing infrastructure. And I'm wondering if you've had any interest in helping from these interests in providing the financing for the pilot study.
I think so, absolutely. Dr. Van Seitfeld with the Murdoch Trust in Vancouver, I've spoken with him on two occasions, and he said, actually, he says it's a great idea. It's probably, quote, probably something we would fund. How much? That's up in the air, of course. It would have to be behind something or someone, like a academic institution or the state or something.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Representative Worth.
And I guess it's the specifics that I'm trying to get at, because some investments pull in higher amount of private donations.
Mm-hmm.
And I know working with the top tier engineering effort for Oregon State University, it was, you know, we could pull in quite a few private dollars based on so many upfront state dollars, but the proponents of that pretty much knew that when they came in and pitched us the proposal. So I guess I'm trying to get a sense from you. There's a lot of people express interest, but mm-hmm. how much do you think a dollar-for-dollar match? How many dollars can you raise privately for every dollar the state puts up for this, would you guesstimate?
Well, I think it'd be more difficult this year from when I was speaking with some of the, for example, the academic institutions, but I supposedly from kind of keeping an ear to the wind, I think it will be easier next year. Being that there is interest out there, kind of the philosophy is Dr. Peter Kohler, president of OHSU, wants to be the biotech research center of the Northwest. Okay, so your medical school right now is losing $6 million a year, and you're really forced against the wall. You can't raise tuition rates because you already have one of the highest medical school tuition rates on the West Coast. Where are you going to go? So they're trying to lure these more and more grants. So this is just really another tool to, if you're going to do biomedical engineering, well, you're going to need this type of tool. You're going to need high-performance computing to do that. So, in my opinion, it's a very good investment, not only for the economy, but just to get done what they want to do. So, but answer your question about the actual dollar amount, that we'd have to ask you, I'd have to ask you, or any of us would have to sit down with Dr. Van Seitfeld or the Confederated Tribes, even showed some interest. They've even shown some interest in getting into involved with power generation. So, I think it would be, more of an accounting at this point needs to take place of how much money is going to be available.
Okay, one final question.
There's certainly no, there's certainly no lack of demand of interest, shall we say.
Final question was regarding the, you mentioned the several other states that have been, have started being involved in this effort. So have they all included some degree of public financing at some point? And then how far along are they in this process? Like Representative Witt asked about if you have any results in certain aspects of the infrastructure, how it's been going. How far along are they in this investment and in getting involved in this high-performance computing that we can see what works and what doesn't work?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow the question. You mean pertaining to other states or pertaining to here? Oh, okay. I would say there it varies. It sounds like North Carolina is the furthest along, and they project that just over $10 billion will be injected into their economy. Now, only one piece of that is supercomputing through the year 2010. Well, we can wait around to 2010 and find out exactly if that's, it came to fruition. But they invested a hoard of money into this. And am I opting that? No. Because I want an affordable exit strategy. So.
Any other questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience that has a question? If you would identify yourself.
My name is Robin Brennan. I'm a science teacher at Mitchell High School. And my question is, so far what I've heard you talk about is how it's going to benefit this side of the mountain. How is it going to affect those people like who live in Mitchell? We have enough trouble getting our North Central ESD, which takes in three counties, being able to communicate with each other on computers. How
is the supercomputing going to help us, and what are the logistics of that? Because we're limited to our internet access and that type of different parameters. That's a very good question. When I spoke with Karen Whitaker at OHSU, she's in charge of the rural medicine program, and I said, well, this could be something that could be used. Obviously, every individual or every organization within rural communities are not going to incur the same amount of benefit. There are going to be organizations that are probably going to incur larger amounts of benefit. But for example, when I spoke with Karen on the phone, she said this might be something that we would be interested in, or at least that concept. Rural medicine in Oregon is kind of in a crisis right now. OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting, has profiled this. And one of the things that this is profiled in my report of some of the things that might bring to fruition to rural areas is opportunities. So, for example, let's say out in Hermiston or Bend, or especially in the areas that might have some community college access, some of these people are fairly well-educated people, but they don't have access to those resources. So, in a sense, now you have access to those resources you can tap into. So maybe now rural hospitals can start to develop additional revenue sources. So they can start to be, for example, one of the things that was profiled on OPB was. They profiled some of the equipment in a rural hospital, and they said we have some. They showed some of the gene sequencing equipment, and they said this is as state of the art as like you would see in a university, except we don't have as many units. And I thought to myself, wow. Well, this, if they had the computing power, they could be doing full-fledged genetic research out here. If that makes sense, they could tap into that.
Are there any other questions? Are there any other questions from the committee? Brian, we'd like to thank you very much for the presentation, and I'm sure all of us will be looking into it. Thank you very much. And I don't think there are any other committee announcements to be made. Do you have any?
No, I was just, House Bill 3145 was first read on Friday, I believe, and that's the bill that was the first cut at the security one. And what we passed out to you last week, Thursday, was more of a finalized draft, which is better, more fleshed out, and a lot more detail. So we're just waiting for that bill to be referred to this committee. And I'm just trying to get a sense here of where we're at with that, because I could use that to get a dash one amendment as soon as it's assigned to this committee, we could, for purposes of discussion.
We'll be looking at 3145 just as soon as Dallas can get it on the table. Any other good of the order announcements? If not, the House Committee on Information Management and Technology will come to a close.